Welcome to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFT, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill, very happy to welcome to the program today from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, Dr. Meg Sleeper. We're going to be talking today about heart disease in pets and how coughing is sometimes a symptom of heart disease. Sometimes it's not. As with cats, it's sometimes related more to a respiratory problem. But we're going to learn all about the difference when we come back after this news from NPR. Welcome to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFT-FM. This is our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill, and I'm very happy to welcome to the program this week from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, Dr. Meg Sleeper. And we're going to be talking today broadly about coughing and heart disease, really heart disease, how coughing may or may not be a symptom. And I want to say thank you so much, Dr. Sleeper, for coming in and joining us on the show today. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for inviting me. I'm excited to be here.
I think a good thing to start off with here at the beginning of the show, when we're talking about heart disease in our pets, and primarily, let's say, cats and dogs, right, is asking, first of all, how common is heart disease?
So heart disease is actually quite common in small breed dogs and also cats once they hit middle age to older age. Less common in younger cats and puppies, but certainly we still see it in dogs and cats of those ages as well. And some large breed dogs develop a type of heart disease also.
I think all of us can understand and relate to heart disease as it affects human beings. But with human beings, we often think of heart disease as being associated with things like cholesterol and blood pressure. Is it the same with pets or is it different?
So there are definitely some similarities, and I think that can be really helpful sometimes for owners in understanding what's happening with their pet. But it's also very different. So cholesterol is not the type of issue it is in dogs and cats that it is for us humans. And also, the types of heart diseases that dogs and cats get, while humans get them, the most common human heart disease, coronary disease, is not something that we see commonly in any of the animal species, actually.
Is there any prevailing theory on why that is?
That's an excellent question, and I think it's really not clear. It's probably for genetic reasons and just how our species evolved over time.
So with heart disease, we're probably talking about a range of different issues associated. Heart disease might include, in cats, say, a hardening of the heart, but in dogs, it may be something different entirely?
Yes, that's actually exactly true. In cats, the most common form of heart disease is a disease called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, where their heart is thicker and stiffer than normal. And that's actually a disease that does occur fairly commonly in humans. Dogs, on the other hand, most commonly develop valve disease that's sort of a degenerative change as they get older. And because of that, they develop a leaky valve, and it's the leak that becomes the problem. Some dogs will also develop a disease called dilated cardiomyopathy, where their heart gets flabbier and weaker than normal. And that's also a disease that humans get. So a lot of similarities, actually.
Okay, so maybe a good place to really get our conversation moving is with a description of the heart itself. I think that many of the listeners of this program are pretty bright folks and who understand anatomy. But for my own sake, let's say that I don't really have a pretty firm grasp on what the heart is, aside from what I've heard, which is a muscle, and I know that it pumps blood. But how does it work, really?
So all mammals, humans, dogs, and cats have four chambers in their heart. The two upper chambers basically act sort of like collecting cavities or areas where blood returns and then is emptied into the lower cavities, which are the ventricles, which are the muscle workhorse of the heart, and then eject blood through the body, both to the pulmonary side or the lungs, as well as to the systemic side.
So this works kind of as a well-oiled machine, really. I mean, if it doesn't, that's when problems arise. It's pumping blood kind of like constantly, but cats and dogs each probably have their own sort of different resting heart rates, I imagine, because different sizes and, I don't know, just different metabolisms or what have you.
Yeah, absolutely. So in cats, a normal resting heart rate in the hospital could be 180 or 200 beats in a minute. In dogs, it's often closer to 100 or 120 beats per minute. And I know this is mostly dogs and cats, but horses, it's actually 36 to 40 beats in a minute. So there's a very wide range across the animal kingdom.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe let's just take a little detour here and maybe even just kind of just to amuse me, how is the difference explained, really? With something like horses, these are a big animal. They do a lot of hard work. How can a heart in such a big animal be effective if it's only beating 30-something, 40 times a minute?
Well, it is a really large heart. And actually, for every ejection that the heart makes, it's pumping out about a liter of blood. So if you think about that in a soda bottle, it's a lot of blood that's being ejected. And the horse, one of the reasons it's such an amazing athlete, with conditioning and as with improvement with exercise, at the maximum heart rate, it can actually pump out about 220 to 250 liters per minute. So while it has a very slow resting heart rate, with activity it goes up very high, and it's normal to get up to 220 or 230 beats in a minute in a fully exercising horse.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, that's a substantial amount of blood. That's buckets and buckets,
yeah.
If you think about it, many gallons. When we talk about an animal like a cat, it probably has a pretty small heart, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Can't move a lot of blood at once, really. Even if it's beating quickly, it's still
a much smaller volume.
Yeah. Now, cats... Cats are generally about an average size. I think we all know what a typical cat looks like. Some cats are bigger than others, but for the most part, we think of cat and we think of an animal, around, say, 10 pounds on average.
Mm-hmm.
With dogs, they vary so much in size, so I imagine their hearts vary in size as well.
Yes, you can imagine between a Chihuahua, which may be, less than a kilogram, or a kilogram in size, which is about 2 pounds, up to a Great Dane, which the largest Great Dane I've ever seen was over 200 pounds. There's a huge range in the canine world.
Therefore, would their heart rates resting be different?
That is a really good question, and one that, interestingly, in a lot of the veterinary literature from decades ago, it was believed that smaller dogs had faster resting heart rates and big dogs had lower resting heart rates. And there have been several studies looking at that in the last 5 years, just to kind of figure out if it's real. And some studies have shown that, in fact, it is, and some have shown that it isn't. So the thing that makes it very difficult to know is what regulates our heart rate is sympathetic tone. So the part of your brain that is deciding whether you should run or rest or eat or fight. And when you're excited, your heart rate automatically goes up because of that sympathetic tone increasing. And in the hospital, most animals have an elevated sympathetic tone. And that seems to vary how activated it is depending on the breed and the individual animal. So it makes knowing some of these things a little bit difficult.
Yeah, you're doing exams on a regular basis on animals that are being brought into a place that's unfamiliar, that they feel frightened or agitated. It might be hard to get a real good estimate of what this animal's health is just based on heart rate alone in a clinical setting, because I can say for sure that my kitty, when she goes to the vet, is not comfortable being there, whereas at home, when she's just lying on my lap, she's probably as calm as she ever can get.
Yes, that's exactly true. And going back to what has historically been in the veterinary literature and said as true is that cats have heart rates between 180 and 220 beats per minute at rest. And that is true in the hospital. But if you were counting your kitty's heart rate when she was sleeping on your lap, there's a very good chance it would be 130 or 140, much, much lower. And that's all related to that elevated excitement when they're in the hospital.
So the heart obviously performs among the most important duties in the entire body. And problems can arise, though, just as with people, problems can arise, especially, I imagine, as animals get older, if we're talking about some sort of like degenerative problems. Mm-hmm. One of the things we're going to be talking about today is how a cough might point to some of these problems. So broadly speaking, what would a cough be like in an animal if it's not just, I think of coughing in myself as being associated with, I don't know, maybe like a cold or a respiratory problem. I don't necessarily think of it as being associated with a heart problem, and yet it may be true for animals?
It may be. Coughing can be caused by many, many different things in dogs and cats, and it makes it sometimes a little tricky to get to the bottom of it. A lot of the smaller breed dogs have some tracheal abnormalities where they're the term for it is collapsing trachea, which sounds horrific, but it basically just means that their windpipe or their trachea is not as rigid as it should be, and they can have an inflammatory process that occurs because of that that causes coughing. And that's very common in breeds like Yorkies and Malteses. But they can also develop inflammatory reactions that cause a cough, allergic reactions. So there are many, many different things. As far as the heart is concerned in the dog, the most common reason it causes a cough is if they have heart enlargement, which basically puts some pressure on the trachea. And because the heart is constantly beating, it can cause sort of an inflammatory response and irritation in the windpipe and cause a honking kind of dry cough.
Is it likely that a pet owner would be able to distinguish between the type of cough the dog is making?
It's very, very difficult for even a veterinarian on physical exam to determine that, and it often requires some further testing. Probably the most useful test would be thoracic x-rays to get a picture of not only the heart size, but also the lungs and the windpipe and see exactly where there might be abnormalities.
Okay, so let's talk about this. X-ray is a really common kind of diagnostic imaging modality, but we often think of X-rays as being used to look at the bones of an animal. You're able to, or at least the radiology service, they're able to kind of, and maybe your local veterinarian would be able to do this as well, set the, I don't know, the contrast or what have you, to really get a decent look at the sort of soft tissues inside, and therefore you might be able to look and see, I don't know, the heart size and relative to some of the other things around it, right? Are you going off of, I don't know, some sort of rubric or some sort of manual that says, well, a dog of this breed should have a heart about this size relative to its other organs inside?
There are several different parameters that have been described over the years to try to get an assessment of heart size. The one that I think is used the most commonly now is one that's called the vertebral heart system or heart size. And basically that is a way of measuring, you measure two different dimensions of the heart on the x-rays and compare that to the dog's vertebra or the backbone. And depending on the number of vertebra that the heart encompasses, you get an idea on whether the heart is enlarged or not. And for the small breed dogs in particular that may develop degenerative valve disease, that can be one of the most useful tests that we have because those dogs can have a murmur for a long time before they ever develop heart enlargement. And until they develop heart enlargement, we generally wouldn't recommend medications anyway. So really, the most important part of staging heart disease, certainly in a dog, would be thoracic x-rays or chest x-rays.
And when you're looking at these x-rays and you're interpreting what you're seeing, are the signs of a problem, once you're looking at the chart, are they hard to see? You're saying that you can compare it, say, to some of the vertebra, and that's that's a pretty good way to judge. But once you've maybe determined that the heart is a little bit bigger, does that really tell you what you need to know, or is there more to it?
So to truly define exactly what's happening in the heart, we generally use ultrasound, which is called echocardiography. And for cats, it's the gold standard to determine whether or not they have heart disease and the underlying type. And it really is very beneficial for dogs as well. However, in the early stages, until they develop heart enlargement, we actually, between a very thorough physical exam and excellent thoracic radiographs, can get a very good picture of what's going on and come up with a plan for the owner. So it can be a very cost-effective way to screen these patients.
Let's talk about this ultrasound modality. What did you call it a minute ago?
Echocardiography.
Echocardiography. Great. So that sort of describes the echo part, describes a little bit of the function of the machine itself. This allows you to get a sort of moving picture of what the heart is doing?
Exactly. And what we're able to evaluate with the echocardiogram is not only chamber size. So with the x-rays, we evaluate, as far as the heart is concerned, what's called the cardiac silhouette. So it's one large soft tissue opacity, and we can get an idea which areas look enlarged. But the ultrasound allows us to see each individual chamber, to assess how well the heart's contracting. And if there is a valve leak, we can actually evaluate it with some special techniques on the machine to determine how large the leak is, how clinically relevant it is.
So you've probably done this process many times. Is it something that takes a long time?
That's a very good question. It depends a little bit on the specific case. So for, I would say, the vast majority of patients, it doesn't take very long, probably 10 to 20 minutes maximum. And in some cases, even less. The cases where it may take longer would be the young patients, in particular with very complicated congenital heart diseases, where sometimes it takes a lot of different scans to get a very good picture of exactly what's happening in the heart.
You mentioned congenital heart problems, and maybe we'll take a little bit of a detour right here to compare and contrast congenital problems with what is the other kind, sort of degenerative heart disease?
Yeah, acquired heart disease.
Acquired heart disease. Most of us think of heart disease as being something that we get as we age, and therefore sort of an acquired heart disease. You know, maybe I don't take such good care of myself and I don't exercise, and so I eventually develop a kind of, some sort of heart disease related to cholesterol or just, you know, a bad diet or something like that. Our pets don't work exactly that way, but as they get older, like you mentioned with cats and the kind of heart disease they often get as they get older, in which the heart kind of just becomes a little bit more stiff and mm-hmm. not as malleable. So what are some of the degenerative versus or acquired versus congenital, and are there sort of extreme dangerous versions in each category?
So as far as acquired types of disease versus congenital, in cats, the most common acquired diseases are diseases that affect the heart muscle, and we term those cardiomyopathies. And the hypertrophic one that we've described is the most common. We believe that it is probably inherited in many cats. And there's some breeds where we know it's inherited. We've actually identified the cause. And the vast majority of mixed cats, domestic short hairs, we don't really know their parentage well enough to be able to track that. But it is inherited in humans, and we think it's similarly inherited in cats. In dogs, the two most common acquired diseases would be a disease called degenerative valve disease, which also appears to be inherited to some degree. It's much more common in certain families. And dilated cardiomyopathy, which is more common in large breed dogs like Doberman Pinschers. And again, these diseases mostly seem to be inherited. So there's definitely an inherited component in all of them.
That's fascinating. You know, There are certainly many inherited heart diseases that human beings can suffer from, but often the heart diseases we have are at least partly due to our own behaviors, and or at least, you know, how we eat or how we don't exercise or what have you. So this makes me wonder if that is the case, how related to breeds are some of these heart disease problems? You mentioned one that affects larger breed dogs. Is it such a thing that some of these diseases are just hardly even seen in smaller dogs? Like a heart disease that you might see in a Doberman Pinscher, you might not see in a Chihuahua.
That is exactly true. It would be very, very unusual to see that type of disease, dilated cardiomyopathy, which we see fairly commonly in Dobermans, in a toy poodle or a Chihuahua or any of the small breeds. Now, the large breed dogs can develop degenerative valve disease, but once again, we think of them as most often developing dilated cardiomyopathy. So the breed and the size of the dog is actually really helpful in trying to determine what the most likely type of heart disease is before we even go to the diagnostic tests.
Would it be especially uncommon for you to see some of those kinds of heart diseases, the acquired ones or ones that are sort of degenerative? Would it be uncommon for you to see some of those in younger animals?
It's very uncommon to see them in younger animals, although sadly, sometimes younger animals are affected. So, for example, with valve disease, which we think small breed dogs, the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel in particular is predisposed to that disease, and we can see it in them as early as 3 years of age. Fortunately, with breeding changes and as people are trying to get rid of it as a problem, we see it later and later, but we will still occasionally see young dogs affected with it. And similarly, Dobermans can present with dilated cardiomyopathy at a quite young age too.
When it comes to treatment, are some of the acquired heart diseases more or less difficult to treat and diagnose even than some of the ones that are congenital?
It's more that we in veterinary medicine are primarily treating symptoms. So instead of necessarily replacing a valve, if the valve's leaking, we often end up using medication to try to help the animal compensate, because there are a lot of mechanisms in the body that are geared up when the body recognizes cardiac output is not what it should be. And the end result often is volume retention or water retention and developing fluid in the lungs or in the body cavity, the abdomen. So often we can actually control signs and the animal feels really good and they're happy and that they can be – they don't realize there's anything wrong. But ultimately, the disease will progress. And it's different than in humans where we can go in and have surgery and potentially it's completely curative. There are some places that are doing valve repair in dogs, but it's still very out of the reach of many people.
As we get a little bit further into the show today, I definitely want us to talk a bit more about some of the treatment options available. But let's kind of move back towards the aspect that we want to hit on today, which is coughing and how that might be a sign of some heart problems. Let's say I'm someone who has brought in an animal, like say a dog. I've got just like a mid-sized sort of normal, everyday sort of mixed breed dog. And I don't know, my dog is maybe like 5 years old or something, and it is having some kind of cough. Where do you begin as a veterinarian to help me understand what might be happening?
So the physical history, so asking you more about when the cough occurs, how often it's been there, if you notice any patterns, those are all very important questions. And then ultimately the physical exam is probably the most important thing that we have to answer the bottom line question, which is where's the cough coming from? If your dog had a murmur, then I would be particularly interested, well, potentially this is related to underlying heart disease. If there's no murmur, that makes heart disease much less likely. And then we start thinking about other types of problems that could be causing the cough. Ultimately, the thoracic radiographs are probably going to be the first test that we do, not only to look at heart size and see is there heart enlargement that could be associated with the cough, but also looking at the airway in general and the lungs to see if we have evidence for bronchitis or lower airway disease that could explain the cough.
You probably also rely on a tool that you'd see just about any veterinarian carry on herself at all times, which is the tried and true stethoscope.
Yeah.
And that allows you to hear pretty well what's going on inside. What are you listening for?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just said if there's a murmur and didn't describe how we necessarily listen for that. But yes, so auscultation or using the stethoscope to listen to the heart sounds and also the lung sounds. That's a very important part of the physical examination. The murmur is a sound that is basically a whooshing sound that covers part of the heart sounds when we listen, and it's associated usually with abnormal blood flow. So it could be a leaky valve in a young animal. It could be that they have a congenital heart disease, that perhaps they have a hole in their heart that blood is squirting through, or it could be just that there is a narrowing in one of the valves that makes the blood come through a lot faster, just like if you put your finger over a hose and the water squirts out faster, the blood would come out faster, and we can hear that as a whooshing sound that is called a murmur.
And so an animal like that may present with a cough?
Yeah, so there are several reasons why dogs with heart disease can present with cough. As I said before, I think one of the most common reasons is as the heart enlarges, it can irritate the windpipe or the trachea. However, it's also possible, particularly as the disease progresses, that they can begin to retain fluid and develop fluid in their lungs, which is called pulmonary edema. When animals begin to retain fluid because of abnormal heart function, the term for that is congestive heart failure, and that can also cause a cough. Usually they also have a faster breathing rate than normal, which the owners will recognize too.
You're listening to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFT-FM. I'm Dana Hill, and I'm speaking today with Dr. Meg Sleeper from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine. We're talking today about heart disease in pets and how coughing may be a sign of heart disease, may not be. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFT-FM, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill, and my guest today from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine is Dr. Meg Sleeper, and we're talking today about heart disease in pets and how coughing may or may not be a sign of heart disease in pets. And when we left off, Dr. Sleeper, I'd sort of asked you about what an average case might be. Let's say I bring in an average size mixed breed dog and it has a cough. Let's say I'm bringing in an average size domestic short hair cat. My cat happens to have long hair, but let's just say I'm bringing in a pretty run of the mill sort of cat that's nothing fancy, not like any special pure breed or anything, just the kind of cat that most people would have. My cat, she's pretty light. You know, she weighs under 10 pounds, more like about 7 pounds. She's about, I don't know, maybe 11 years old. And she's having some sort of cough. What are you thinking when I bring in this animal and say that she's got this kind of problem?
So the first two differentials that I would consider in a cat that's coughing are actually not related to heart disease primarily at all. One would be feline asthma or lower airway disease, and then the other is heartworm disease. And that actually probably sounds funny when I say it's not really related to heart disease, but the parasites that are heartworms live in the lungs. So it's actually primarily a lung disease. And a lot of people expect that coughing in cats is likely due to cardiomyopathy, but it's almost never seen with cats that have primary heart disease.
So this is excellent to hear because we're talking now about a respiratory issue primarily. We're not talking necessarily about any sort of heart problem. Now, I might infer from that information, oh, this is great news because something like the myopathy is something I would think of as being like really potentially life-threatening. If it's something just respiratory, like maybe heartworms or maybe even an asthma, perhaps that is more readily treatable. Am I sort of off base to be optimistic here?
It's always good to be optimistic, but I would say it's partially off base here. The feline asthma often is treatable, and we often can control the signs, although just like in humans, it can be pretty debilitating and frustrating to deal with. Heartworm disease is a really difficult disease in cats. It is a disease that the drug that we use to kill the worms in dogs is toxic in cats, so we can't do that. And whenever one of these worms dies in a cat, the cat is actually at risk of dying too. So it's a really awful disease. Fortunately, it is entirely preventable with the different preventative medications that are available. But unfortunately, I think a lot of people just don't think of their cats when they think of heart disease.
Can we back up a little bit and talk about how a cat might acquire heartworm disease?
So it's similar to dogs. It's from a mosquito bite, and it's one of the reasons it's such a problem in Florida with the climate here. Interestingly, in the studies that have been performed in cats, you know, a lot of owners will say, well, my cat's entirely indoors, so it's not going to get heartworm disease. And at least 50% of the cats that have been shown to have heartworm disease are indoor cats. So those mosquitoes can get in almost anywhere. And unfortunately, being an entirely indoor cat does not prevent your risk of developing heartworm disease.
So let's say I'm a concerned cat parent and I don't want this to befall my pet. What do I do?
So talk to your veterinarian. There are many excellent, preventative medications available, and they're very, very effective. They just need to be administered. In this area, they need to be administered year-round because the risk of mosquitoes is always present. In some parts of the country, in the Northeast or Colorado, for example, the actual transmission time is much shorter, and the cats don't need to be in preventative year-round.
Okay, this is good information. Forewarned is forearmed. But let us say that I am concerned that my cat does have a heart problem. What kinds of symptoms am I going to see if that's the case and it's not coughing?
So cats can be tricky with a lot of different diseases. They just are very good at hiding their signs. So a lot of times we actually first detect them or recognize that they have heart disease when they have already developed what I called congestive heart failure before, when they already have fluid that's retained and they're having trouble breathing. So that's probably the most common reason they end up coming in. The owner recognizes, wow, you know, he's really having trouble breathing. I need to get into the hospital. Other possible signs that might be present would be a murmur. So some of these cats will have a murmur on their routine physical exam. However, once again, murmurs are tough in cats because many cats will have murmurs that are entirely benign and not related to disease at all. And then other possible signs would be weakness or fainting.
How will my vet know if a murmur is benign or if it points to something a bit more malicious?
It is almost impossible to determine that just on physical exam, unfortunately. So most of the time, we would recommend an echocardiogram to determine what's causing the murmur and is it something we need to worry about or is it something we can just ignore the murmur the rest of the cat's life?
So when we're looking at a murmur, we're talking about maybe some blood swooshing around in there. Maybe it's not like fully the valves and whatnot are not kind of maintaining sort of tight control on whatever leakage could occur. Why might that be risky?
I'm sorry.
Let us say that there is a murmur.
Mm-hmm.
And why could that potentially have negative health effects?
So it really depends on what's causing it. So if it is because of a leaky valve or obstruction to outflow, that narrowing to outflow, those issues could ultimately result in worsening heart function. So the leak could get bigger and bigger. That narrowing to outflow will make the heart have to work harder and get thicker. So those are the issues that could progress. In some cats, there's a murmur that when we actually do the ultrasound, we don't find any pathology. So the heart looks entirely normal, and we can sometimes find mildly elevated flow rate that is, we think, associated with high sympathetic tone. So cats are anxious in the hospital, and that increases the risk of having some of these flows that we can hear that actually are not because of pathology. So those cats do fine with those murmurs. So murmurs are not always bad in cats.
When we're talking about coughs, would a dog with heartworms present with a cough?
Yes. So coughing is actually a very common sign associated with heartworm disease in dogs. They also can do something where they cough up blood. So they'll actually cough up a sputum that's bloody and red. That's a very common finding with heartworm disease. Fortunately, particularly in dogs that are regularly going to the veterinarian, they're tested at least once a year to determine if they are infected. So most dogs now are recognized to have heartworm disease before they get to the more advanced stages, which is really beneficial because we can treat them hopefully before it's irreversible. Ultimately, the disease can be irreversible.
That's disappointing, and I imagine that considering the dire nature of it, there is research underway to kind of help cure animals of this problem, including cats, because, I mean, you're saying it's so much harder to treat in cats, and that is alarming to me as someone who has a cat to think that this animal could become a victim of a disease for which there is very little that can be done. You know, but mostly I'm thinking about if I'm bringing in my cat with, to my vet, I don't want to imagine that my cat is experiencing some sort of heart disease or any other kind of disease, really. And, you know, when we're looking at the different sort of symptoms and we're looking at the different ways that these diseases are diagnosed, we're talking about a couple things. But now let's talk a little bit about how some of these diseases might be treated if there is, in fact, treatment available for some of these conditions. So maybe not so much some of the really respiratory kind of things that cats get, like heartworms, but with some of the problems with the valves. You mentioned earlier some medication. How does medication help something that I tend to think of as more of a physiological problem, that maybe things aren't closing right or maybe there's a hole?
Yeah, so what the medications actually are doing is blunting the body's response to this abnormal physiologic process. So what generally happens in animals when cardiac output is lower, the body sort of sees that as loss of blood or hemorrhage, and that's the response that results in extra volume in the body and ultimately fluid retention. So the medications basically have different arms, how they work. And there are 3 to 4 medications that we use routinely in dogs and also in cats with heart failure. They blunt the response to retain water. They blunt the hormonal response that basically is a mechanism to both retain water and to increase cardiac output, but it's deleterious long term. And then there's also a medication which improves contractility or improves heart function. So all of those medications together can often keep the animal from retaining fluid, and they feel good and everything that way is good, but we're really not addressing the valve disease.
So it will perhaps just continue to be a problem long term, will the medication prove ineffective in alleviating some of the symptoms?
Most often, over time, the disease will progress, and ultimately, the medications won't be effective at some point. The good news is we often are really good at controlling those signs for a fairly long time in a lot of dogs and cats. And while we do, their quality of life is very good. The negative is that often the disease does progress.
If we're talking about a disease that might arise later in an animal's life, is it possible that some of the treatments that you have in terms of medications and whatnot might allow the animal to live a pretty high quality of life even longer so that, you know, it lives close to its average life expectancy anyway? Or do the diseases progress with greater speed as the animal ages, and at some point, sooner than later, the medication just becomes not sufficient to counteract the malady?
You know, it's interesting. Every dog and cat's a little bit different, not only in how they respond to the medication, but how their disease progresses. So there are cats that we will diagnose with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy that the progression may be 10 years. It can be very, very slow. And the cat feels great and doesn't know there's any problem at all. So with that type of patient, it's often just monitoring and making sure that we don't need to become more aggressive. And then there's some cats where they progress over months to a year. And that's similar in dogs as well. So there are certainly patients that we keep them comfortable and happy, and they basically get pretty close to what their normal life expectancy would have been. And sadly, there's some that, in spite of everything we do, they progress, and we just aren't able to be as successful as we'd like to.
Other than medication, are there sometimes surgeries that are employed to counteract some of these heart problems?
Yeah. And actually, the valve repair surgery that I mentioned earlier is something that I think will become more available for people over the next decade or maybe two decades. It's definitely more available than it was in the recent past. So that's a possibility. There are several studies looking at minimally invasive ways to try to repair the valve. And hopefully that will become an option someday. And then there are lots of procedures that are available for animals with congenital heart disease. So a valve doesn't form correctly, or they have an abnormal shunt or vessel that never closed correctly. Those are actually some diseases that we can make a very big difference for surgically.
Yeah, let's hear about some of that, because I like to hear about things that point towards good news for pet owners and for our pets to have longer, happier, and better qualities of life. When we're talking about some of these congenital problems, you know, it's especially sad because they might be affecting young animals, and what a pity to think that, you know, some little kitten or puppy might have a bleak future to look forward to. But if there are treatments available that might make its life longer and better, how, when looking at some of these problems, how does one go about sort of figuring out ways in which a treatment might be a good fit? I mean, medications are wonderful, and surgeries seem to be kind of like a real hands-on, practical way to address some of these problems. But I imagine that some of the congenital problems vary so widely that kind of pinpointing a treatment available might be challenging.
You know, there are some animals that have very complex and rare abnormalities, and for those, often it is very challenging. However, the vast majority of dogs in particular, if they are going to have a congenital heart disease, it's one of three things most commonly. Well, there are three of the most common. And patent ductus arteriosus is one that is very common, that is fairly easy to diagnose. And it's a situation that can occur in babies as well. They just don't close a shunt that is normally there when they're in the uterus at birth. And we're able to close that surgically, and the prognosis is excellent. Those puppies, less common in kittens, but kittens as well, go on and lead an entirely normal life if they're closed. Whereas if they were treated medically, ultimately they would succumb to the disease. So they're, I think the most important thing is in a very young animal where it's likely to be congenital and there may be corrective procedures to get a definitive diagnosis so you know what's out there.
That's sound advice. Now, let's talk a little bit about what this surgery entails, because just from my naive perspective here, I imagine that doing surgery on a tiny animal is more challenging than doing surgery on a larger animal.
In the pediatrics, it can be, but we actually – so there are two different types of surgical approaches for that patent ductus arteriosus procedure. The one that was used up until maybe 20 years ago is one where the chest is actually opened and the procedure is done as you would think of surgical procedures being performed. And that actually has been successfully done in puppies as small as 350 grams. It requires a very talented surgeon, but its size is not that much of a limiter with that kind of process. The other way that at least most cardiologists like to deal with it is called an interventional procedure, where a catheter is advanced into the arterial system and we basically plug that shunt with a device that occludes it. So the procedure, it's very similar to a person who's had a cath. It's a very small incision in the groin, and the procedure itself is actually quite straightforward and pretty safe. The limiting factor is in a very small animal, like a kitten or a puppy that's smaller than 2 pounds, it's very difficult to advance a catheter because they're just so little. So in a very small animal, we tend to do the chest surgery. Once they're bigger than 2 pounds, we can do the interventional procedure.
What sort of follow-up is required through this animal's life that has perhaps had one of these procedures? Is it safe to say with some of them that you can assume that the treatment is going to be effective? Or would you recommend that an animal that has had this, that the owner continually follow up throughout the animal's life and say, hey, you know, veterinarian, my animal has had this procedure in the past. How do we know that it's still doing okay?
So for this is an excellent one to have near the end because it's a great it's a great story. Because for most dogs, once they have that corrected, we'll check them once, 1 to 2 months afterwards to make sure there's no residual shunting, and they may never need another recheck. They're basically a normal dog at that point. The caveat to that would be if the patent ductus was not closed early enough, so there was some residual impact on the heart and cardiac function is not normal any longer, some of those dogs do require follow-up. But most people that are going to do the procedure do it early enough that these dogs do really well.
As we approach the end of the program here, maybe a good idea would be to help folks who may suspect that there's a problem. Give them some good advice. If someone listening right now has an animal that maybe has a cough, or maybe they have a pet that they suspect there may be a heart problem, maybe based on something they've discussed in the past with their veterinarian, what's the best advice you can offer?
So I think the most important thing is to have a discussion with your veterinarian. The person who has done your routine care, hopefully for a fairly long period of the pet's life, that they're going to know exactly the history, what's been going on, and how likely the risk is for heart disease versus some other disease. And certainly if there's any question at the University of Florida, we're there for clients if they call with questions, or also for referring veterinarians if they have a case that is a little bit unusual and they want to discuss it further, we're happy to do that.
Well, Dr. Meg Sleeper from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us today. I really enjoyed the conversation. I learned a lot, too.
Thanks very much. It was fun.
I want to say thank you to Sarah Carey and her staff over at the College of Veterinary Medicine, and I thank you, the listener, as well. Hope you'll tune in again next time for another episode of Animal Airwaves Live. Bye-bye.